You're about to see a few people learn to use one of the newest, most advanced business computers in the world. If you know how to point, you already know how to use it. Macintosh, the computer for the rest of us.
Hello, and welcome to the GoCast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Aaron Elijah. Joining me today, he's the Marge to my Homer Simpson, Buster. Kiney is here.
Oh, I thought I was Homer and you were Marge.
Oh, we could do that too.
Okay. So
we could switch up the roles. That's fine. Well, if I'm Homer, I guess that would make our next guest Barney. Leanna Caney is here.
Barney. I was thinking more like, I don't know, Apu maybe.
Apu? I was actually going to originally say Ned Flanders.
Ugly doodly.
Ugly doodly do. One of the greatest characters ever invented. You know what I love about Ned Flanders is how he's so pure as a character, but he's so like hypersexual. Like anytime you see him in like a bathing suit, he's just totally ripped. Or there was one episode where he was in like a ski outfit and he zooms in on his butt and it's like just hard as a rock, you know? Like he's in just like outrageously good shape. But
I don't remember that about Ned Flanders. But
you don't? Yeah, no. he's stacked. He's one of the sexiest characters.
I don't know if you had a man crush on Ned Flanders.
No, I don't. I don't. Maybe a little. Yeah, he's definitely one of the best characters in The Simpsons. Anyway, I don't know how we got into The Simpsons. We're going to be talking about Apple stuff this week, as we often do on this show. Often, not always. And let's see here. What do we have on the slate? Oh, well, we're gonna talk about this crazy hacking stuff that's going on. Man, you know, hacking stuff never really bothered me. Privacy has never really been an issue that concerned me. You know, I have cameras that are internet connected all over my house. I have an Amazon Echo that's listening constantly, like the Ives Siron sitting in my house. Never bothered me. And then after seeing all the stuff that has happened this week, now I'm starting to question whether or not this stuff is actually safe. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to tell you why after we scare the crap out of you guys, we're going to tell you why none of this matters. And we're going to do some more iPhone 8 rumors. I think the iPhone 8 has finally gotten its name. We will reveal that to you later in the show if you don't already know it. And we're going to wrap up the show with an all-new What We're Into. That's a segment where we talk about, creatively named, what we're into. This is stuff that may not be Apple-related at all. In fact, usually isn't, because we spend most of the show talking about Apple. This is our opportunity to tell you about stuff that we're into that may not be Apple-related, and I have got the hotness this week to reveal to you guys. So, without further ado, before we hop into the news, a couple quick things. First, let me say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Are you ready to make your next move in 2017? Well, if you are, you know you're going to have a website to support your business, your new photography venture, your pole dancing business, whatever you are going to be getting into. You need to have an awesome web presence. And that's where Squarespace comes in. I actually just had a friend the other day, not a joke, serious, came to me. He's starting this new financial, I don't know if it's like a counseling service or financial, you know, helping people like save money on their taxes through creative ways of like, you know, investing money in charities and that type of thing. And he was saying, I need a website, what should I do? And I pointed him to Squarespace because he wanted to manage the whole thing himself and he doesn't want to hire a developer. And more than anything else, he doesn't want to have to pay someone to update the website every time he wants to add a story or change his bio or add stuff to the website. Squarespace was perfect. And you can get a Squarespace website set up in no time at all. Everything is drag and drop. You don't need to know how to code. It's very, very user friendly. And it's also very powerful. You can customize everything and make the website look uniquely yours. And right now, you can get a two-week free trial at squarespace.com. Build the website, play around with it, see how you like it. If you are happy with the service at the end of the two-week trial, you can continue your service. With code CULTCAST, you can save 10% off any purchase at squarespace.com. That is code CULTCAST at checkout squarespace.com. Oh, and I would be remiss if I didn't at least mention this. So about once a year, we put out a survey and ask you, our listeners, to fill out some information about yourselves. Now, it would be great if you guys would be willing to do this. We always need as many people to do it as possible. And here's what it helps us do. It helps us, you know, get the right advertisers on the show. Like, you don't want to be hearing about baked goods or Martha's Yarn Shop, I'm guessing. And if you tell us, like, the kind of stuff that you're into, a little bit about yourself, it helps us get the right sponsors on the show so that you are not annoyed by the sponsors that we promote on the show. And, you know, we want to tell you about cool stuff that you might actually be interested in. We don't want to just tell you about crap. So it'd be really helpful if you guys would take, you know, 2 minutes, fill out the survey. It's at podsurvey.com/cults, podsurvey.com/cult. It's really quick. It's really easy. And once you've completed the survey, you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card, podsurvey.com/cult. All right, let's talk about hacking, espionage, spy activities, and I have a feeling this is going to lead us into a conversation about Leander's adventures of Peeping Tom, hiding up in trees, using binoculars, spy on people.
Buster's.
Oh, but does Buster do it with you?
Oh, with my drone.
With his, what do you think he's got his drone for?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah. Seriously. I wonder how big of a problem that actually is. That's exactly what you could use it for. Of course, you would hear it outside your window, right, Buster? You couldn't just hover a drone there.
I don't know. It's pretty quiet.
Maybe the Mavic is, but like the Phantom 4 Pro or something like that, isn't it? I don't think so, man. Like, if you tried to George McFly that thing, someone would hear it. For sure. This hacking thing is crazy. If you haven't heard anything about it, there was basically a WikiLeaks that happened this week of a big dump of all the CIA hacking tactics. And it turns out the CIA has been collecting all these different ways of breaking into your devices, iOS devices, Android devices, your smart TV, who knows what else. And somehow these tools got into the wrong hands. So now this huge arsenal of hacking methodologies that the CIA has been developing and curating has gotten into the hands of other people. And now this entire hacking arsenal can be used, I mean, as far as I understand, to break into your devices for nefarious purposes. Leander, you've been covering this a little bit. Do I have that about right? Did I miss anything there?
Well, Buster actually would probably be better to call Matt because he looked more closely at it. Buster.
Yeah, like you're saying, like they can use the tools now to hack other people's iPhones. That's not true. I mean, it shows how the FBI or the CIA was kind of going about hacking phones and stuff, and maybe people could like try and mimic their workflow and their stuff like that. But the vulnerabilities and exploits that they used have all been patched, so they don't work.
So if you're using like a new version of iOS,
if you're updated on the most recent version of iOS 10, you should be just fine.
Well, the interesting thing is Apple in their statement said many of the vulnerabilities have been patched.
That's also because they have to go through them all and check for themselves as well. I mean, there's over 8,000 documents and files. So, I mean, as I talked to Chronic, he's a developer who was one of the first to really start jailbreaking the iPhone, and he said a lot of the stuff that was released wasn't that surprising. Like, it was like, oh yeah, the CIA is doing that, but their WikiLeaks didn't release the actual tools for people to use that they could use.
Just descriptions of how things were being hacked and what things were being done.
Yeah.
Doesn't this kind of freak you guys out a little bit? I mean, this really did bother me at a deeper level. I know we talked about privacy in the past.
What aspect of it bothers you? Because this isn't like the NSA leaks where Snowden revealed that they're just gathering tons and tons of information on everybody. Like, this is their tools that they use on specific targets. It's not like they're just hacking anybody's phone remotely and taking all of your information and putting it on a server. It's if they're able to access your phone and hack it for some reason, like they're investigating you.
Well, I'm not so worried that the CIA is going to be looking through my camera roll. What I'm more unnerved about is that the fact that these hacking techniques can be used by others, maybe not the CIA, because you know the CIA has been collecting techniques from other hackers. They weren't developing these all themselves, according to the reports. And you know, I have all these smart devices in my home. As I said earlier, I have cameras that are connected to the web. I have an Amazon Echo, which is basically always just sitting there listening to everything that happens in my living room. I've got my Xbox One, which has a Kinect attached to it. I'm that one guy that actually has a Kinect. And it's always listening. You have your iPhone in your pocket, which, you know, they were saying they could turn on your camera and your microphone and use it as like a roaming bug. And they could even restart or turn your iPhone on if you had it turned off. They could power it on and use it. They could put your Samsung smart TV into like this zombie state where you think it's turned on and it's actually sitting there listening to you. I mean, it kind of makes me really question whether or not I need all these smart devices in my home.
Okay. I mean, all of that stuff can be done by other people too, not just the CIA.
Well, that's my point. I'm not worried about the CIA doing it. Okay. I'm worried about other people
doing it. This is what the WikiLeaks was trying to make a big point of in its initial press release, was that this is circulating. And they said so far it's, CIA, ex-CIA hackers and defense contractors. So it made it seem as though it was circulating within a fairly small group of, presumably trustworthy actors. But their point was a philosophical point, saying that if it's circulating amongst these guys, it could be potentially circulating amongst other folks who aren't so benign.
Totally. I mean, this is like in was it? it's the Die Hard movie with Justin Long, and he's like one of the hackers, and like all the hackers all know each other, and they're all talking to each other, right? Like sharing their exploits. This is kind of like that. I mean, report said that there's 5,000 registered users who had produced over 1,000 tools that they were using to infiltrate targets throughout Latin America, Europe, and the United States. You know, these people, some of these people had to talk to each other, share these tools, these techniques with their friends. I mean,
right.
I'm sure all these people are respecting the fact that this is classified work that they're doing, but some of them probably are not.
They're not respecting someone passed it to WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
Clearly. Good point. That's a great point that you're making there, Leander.
I mean, they have 5,000 people on the team trying to make hacks and stuff like that, so it's a massive amount of people working on it.
Yeah.
So anybody you can fly under the radar on a team like that. Similar like Snowden, you know?
You know, I was thinking as a defensive mechanism, what you can do, because if they're breaking into your iPhone and stuff, like they can look through all your camera stuff, search your voice messages, that type of thing, your text messages maybe. As a defensive strategy, what you could do is just take like 50 pictures of your own spread eagle arse and have that in your camera roll. So when they go in there, they start looking around, they're so repulsed. Oh, they're like, God, I'm never going into Leander Caney's phone again. Let's leave this guy alone. Let's move on to somebody else.
Or that's
going to
make them dig deeper. They're going to be like, oh, what kind of weird stuff does this guy get into?
Right. Yeah, that's more likely. Oh, I haven't heard of that ASMR. As a defensive strategy.
It was just the first thing that came to my mind. I don't know if it would be effective. I think it might be, but that's a good point, though, Buster. They're like, look at the sick stuff this guy's into. We need to leak this to North Korea ASAP.
Well, this was Tim Cook's point as well with the FBI investigation of San Bernardino. This is why they didn't want to make a backdoor, because once they've made it, it could, it has the potential to be leaked and to get into the wrong hands.
Yeah.
I never really wanted to take this seriously, but hearing all this stuff is out there and it's possible. Now I'm like, wow, I'm being really naive. This stuff could really be used against me in some way, or just for people to snoop,
Yeah.
Right. Well, some 14-year-old to snoop and to listen to your house and be smart enough to figure out how to get into your Amazon Echo or something.
Yeah. Well, I don't think your iPhone is probably going to, what you should be worried about. It's all those, unsecured IoT devices like those, that cheaper, camera you bought, Wi-Fi camera you bought on Amazon, that's probably going to be more likely.
It's a Netgear, like, internet security connected camera, and I'm sure Netgear is doing their best to secure it. I'm sure Amazon's doing their best to secure it, but there's vulnerabilities in everything. I mean, you have Microsoft, one of the most wealthy companies on Earth, constantly putting out updates, trying to keep up with all the exploits people find. And there's always going to be a way in. So they have to be continually vigilant to fix that stuff. And then you just kind of wonder, how vigilant are they being? How many exploits are out there that they may not even know of? And could someone actually be using these devices in my house to listen to me and all the very sensual things that happen in my living room? I don't really want that. I don't want people listening in. It maybe it's because I'm getting older, but it's like the privacy thing. I had an epiphany, actually. I think I talked about this on a past show. The reason the privacy thing has become more important to me is just because I was going to a doctor's appointment. This is like 2 months ago, and I was using Waze, you know, which Amazon owns, or excuse me, Google owns. And I was typing in the address, and it pulled up like the name of my doctor's office. And I was like, oh, now Google knows when I go to the doctor, right? And they know who my doctor is. That is a creepy thing to think about. Like the fact that Google will know that about me. I don't care if they know what websites I'm visiting, but you know, when they actually know like what physical places you are going, how long it takes you to get there, where you live, and where your doctor's office lives. I don't know why, but that really creeps me out.
Yeah, why? Are you saying, what kind of doctor are you seeing? Is it Trump's doctor?
I don't know if he is Trump's doctor, but he is orange. He's bright orange. So it's a possibility. Yes, I don't know. I mean, it's totally benign. I mean, it's not like I'm going to like a cancer doctor or something. But still, I mean, what if I were, right? Google would may be able to tell that, oh, this guy has cancer. This guy has something serious going on. It just, for some reason, that really weirds me out. That doesn't bother you guys?
Yeah, a little bit. Really? I mean, I can see where you're coming from. I mean, wait until you get a, you know, Apple self-driving car. Then you're going to be really really screwed.
Well, actually, that's one of the reasons why I'm leaning more towards using Apple Maps now instead of Google's Maps, because Apple doesn't track that stuff. They just, everything's private to your phone. I mean, they're not using that data to sell you ads or show you ads. They're keeping that stuff private.
Yeah, they say. Yeah. Well, actually, there was a scandal, wasn't there? Was it a year ago, 2 years ago, where they found that data was actually being uploaded to Apple servers?
I do remember that. Yeah, but they squashed that pretty quick.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and I agree. I think, you know, like generally, yeah, definitely Apple, you know, is not in the business of reselling your data. So more than likely, they're not going to be collecting it. And if they are collecting it, it's probably, you know, innocuous, and they're not selling it. They're not in the business of selling it.
Exactly. They're not using it to sell your products. Like, that's Google's entire business.
Right.
And Facebook as well, right? Like, they're using all your data against you, so to speak. So I take it that this whole hacking thing, this whole big reveal, didn't really bother you guys as much as it bothered me.
Well, you know, like I said, we busted a bunch of stuff. It looked like it was really big news. It was like, oh, my God, you know, like, this is a huge, huge deal. So we busted, like, three posts on it, three, four posts. And then Buster got a hold of Chronic, and who's a jailbreak, you know, one of the
Buster got a hold of the Chronic,
and he breaking. You know, he gave us a really pretty detailed breakdown of his analysis of it, and he said, you know, amongst other things, it looks like none of these tools are particularly new. Like you said in your intro, you know, the CIA had been curating this stuff from other sources, and so a lot of this stuff had already been patched. It was interesting to see the scope of it. It was interesting to see that they actually have this methodology. It's interesting to see the organization of the CIA, that they have a unit. You know, it's like actually a pretty big unit for all kinds of smart devices, but there's actually one for iOS in particular. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. But, you know, Chronic was saying that it looked to him like a jailbreaking team, you know, like his analysis of the, you know, like the wiki. It looked like the kind of wiki that the jailbreak teams have set up for themselves to share information about vulnerabilities in iOS, you know, to create a jailbreak. And he thought it looked like an R&D effort. It didn't look like it was sort of, they were curating and experimental. He didn't think a lot of this stuff was, you know, what they called like production ready. Mm-hmm. So, but of course, this is only a fraction of what WikiLeaks claims to have.
Yeah. Didn't they say this is like 1% of what they actually have?
Yeah. Something like that. I think so. But, you know, so his initial, he said, and he was very carefully caveated it too. He said, you know, like my initial assessment is that there is nothing really, you know, crazy freaky here. The other thing is like all these vulnerabilities, like Buster said, is like, you know, none of these are remote vulnerabilities as far as I know. You know, you've actually got to have the device in hand in order to take advantage of them. Like that, you know, the Samsung TV one, you've got to sneak a USB thumb drive into the back of the TV in order to infect it. It
can't
be infected
part.
By the internet. And I believe that that's the same is true for all these iPhone and iPad hacks as well. You actually have to have the device in hand. And also he said that they weren't really covering their tracks either. You know, like it wasn't really, if someone's device had been affected, they should be able to find out pretty easily because it's not covering itself up.
But how would you know? You wouldn't ever think that there'd be something like that on your phone.
Yeah, you'd have to know how to go find it. But I'm presuming if you dug around in the about this phone settings, you know, or this version of the iOS or whatever, you know, you could find it.
There's like a new switch in your settings that's like hack.exe on or off. You could go, oh, what's this? And just turn it off, and they're like, oh, he found it. Turned off the camera.
Precisely.
Well, you hear these kinds of stories, and then you hear like what Mark Zuckerberg does on his computer. Did you guys hear what he does to keep his microphone secure?
He tapes it.
But
well, he tapes his camera, but like his actual microphone, he keeps a pair of earphones, like AirPods, plugged into his audio jack on his computer, but he cuts the actual wire, so there's nothing there. So his computer will default to that microphone, but the wires are cut. So you hear stuff like that, and you're like, man, if he is that paranoid about microphones and
well, he has to be. He's Mark Zuckerberg, you know? I mean, he's a pretty primo target if he could get hacked, you know?
what are they going to get from the Zuck?
What?
I wonder what he's working on.
Learning about his private life and details of his private life and stuff like that could, you know, be damaging to him publicly.
Isn't that ironic? Yeah. The guy who runs Facebook is worried about his own personal privacy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's hilarious.
He's very worried about it because he knows all about it. I mean, he knows what Facebook's up to. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. Like, he's like, if only these people knew what we were taking. He's like, I'm not letting them get my stuff. Didn't he buy like the properties around his house too? And he like bought his neighbors' houses with the caveat that they could stay there, but as soon as they moved, that he would own the houses and that he could, you know, have the entire area on lockdown. Did you guys read about this?
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. He bought like four or five houses around him in Palo Alto.
Oh, he lives in Palo Alto. That's
well, he really bought a house up in San Francisco, and I think he tried to do the same thing in San Francisco, but I think he got turned down.
Poor guy.
But he also has a huge property in Hawaii. I mean, he's trying to evict all of these people with property claims so that he can be totally private in Hawaii.
That's too good to me. I mean, the fact that you're running Facebook and yet you're so anal about your own privacy that you're buying people's houses around your own. I mean, that was kind of the cool thing about Steve Jobs is that he just had his house. It was just a regular house. He didn't buy his neighbor's houses and get all weird. And I mean, if you wanted to, you could just go knock on the door, couldn't you, Leonier? I mean, it was just like in the middle of this neighborhood.
He used to leave his door open. You could just walk in. I heard loads of stories about that. People would just walk in the back door.
And because they, you know, didn't have security or anything like that there?
No,
That's crazy.
He was, you know, he lived a very normal life.
Well, except for the fact that he didn't let his kids use iPads. Right. We should talk about that on a future show. I've been wanting to bring that up, but that's a whole other conversation. I thought that was crazy. One other thing about the hacking I wanted to mention real fast. Leander, you wrote a story. You said that the iPhones were actually specifically targeted by the CIA because of global elites, globalists' love of the iPhone. Right. Isn't that true?
It's the phone of the Illuminati, right?
That's right. All those, did you ever see Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise, and he went to that party? That's like, those are all the people we're talking about. They all use
all
iPhones.
iPhone users, yeah. That's exactly what it is.
So they said that there was a disproportionate focus on iOS. Oh, actually, these are your words, Leander. It may be explained by the popularity of the iPhone among social, political, and diplomatic and business elites, guys like us, basically.
Right, precisely.
We're amongst this class of people. So they were specifically targeting these kinds of phones just because, you know, rich people, elite people, Illuminati were using them?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly, you know, it totally makes sense. You know, it's the phone of the people that make that move the levers. So the CIA, you know, like they want to spy on, you know, international terrorism finances, you know.
This is too good.
They're probably going to be using an iPhone, so.
This is a great SNL sketch. They should make like an iPhone commercial where it's like it's the phone of the Illuminati, and they have all these like Clark or like cloaked figures, you know, like sending each other iMessages and stuff. All righty. Well, moving on from the CIA stuff, I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about this in the future. I mean, this is just they're basically just scratching the surface of this right now.
Yeah, yeah. There's a story today, you know, that Assange promised to share all this any stuff they find with the tech companies like Apple and Google, so they can patch if there's anything they didn't know about, any sort of zero day vulnerabilities, they could patch them before they become public.
One more thing, you're pulling me back in. I like that WikiLeaks is holding some people accountable with these types of reports. But on the other hand, you know, there is, I'm sure, a global army of computer scientists, military, if you will, that are trying to break into each other's stuff. Like, you know, the Chinese are doing it, the Russians are clearly doing it, we're doing it. And you don't want them revealing too many of, like, the U.S.'s secrets, right? I wish they were doing this with China, with Russia, with other countries that have their own cyber security divisions, which I'm sure they all do, so that it's kind of a fair playing field. Because when they just keep doing it to the U.S., like, they're spoiling, I'm sure, some of the U.S.'s tactics that are being used to keep the country safe. Like, not all of them are used for, you know, national security, but I'm sure a lot of them are, you know. Yeah. And when the WikiLeaks exposes this stuff, it makes the U.S. less safe.
Like, one thing Chronic did tell me, like, after was just after he looked at all the press coverage, he said it was clearly like whoever released the information was trying to hurt the CIA more than anything, as far as just like their reputation, like it's bad timing with Trump and everything. I think Leander mentioned that, like, Trump hates the intelligence community, so it makes the intelligence community look a little bit bad right now. And it just basically gives the enemies insight into how the CIA's hacker tradecraft works. And so it's, like, great for other spy agencies to kind of learn from them a bit.
Exactly. Hacker tradecraft. Perfect. Did you coin that? Is that yours?
That's the words that Chronic used, actually.
Oh.
Mr. Chronic.
That's why he's the Chronic and we're all just Skiff.
There definitely is a political angle to this, too, as well, like, you know, Buster mentioned.
Undoubtedly. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about some iPhone 8 stuff. So we've been calling it the iPhone 8, but it looks like, according to a new report, it may be called, drumroll, please. Drumroll.
I don't know. I can't do a drum roll.
That was a good drum roll. Thank you. It kind of sounded like a sad trombone.
Yeah.
The iPhone Edition, which might make sense. The iPhone Edition. It's a special edition iPhone. In the year of the iPhone 7, we have a special edition iPhone. What do you think, Leander? Do you think that might be what it's called?
Well, I'm sorry. What was it going
to
be called?
The iPhone Edition. The premier.
Oh, really?
The premier phone for the quote-unquote iPhone 8, as we've been talking about.
It would be in line with what they call the watches.
Right.
That's true. Exactly. And it kind of makes sense to me because the 7S is the phone that we're supposed to get. And if they don't want to switch to the iPhone 8, you know, then they can have a special edition and they can still use the iPhone 8 naming convention when they get to next year's iPhone. And as as we've been talking about on this show, there's supposed to be a 4.7-inch and a 5.5-inch iPhone 7S, which are supposed to be, by and large, the same as they are now with a few improvements here and there. And then the 5.8-inch OLED iPhone Edition, if that's what they end up calling it. But here's some bad news. According to this report, though the 4.7 and the 5.5 phones will be announced and debuted in September, for some reason, they are expecting the iPhone Edition to go on sale much later in the year. In fact, the report says that Apple is still experimenting with various phone prototypes and hasn't even decided on what exactly the phone is going to be like, aside from a few features that we've talked about, including wireless charging and the dual camera setup. Leander is chortling in the background. Leander, your thoughts?
I find that highly suspect.
Yeah, you think so?
Oh yeah, yeah. If they're gonna pump this thing out, they were already predicting, you know, in the last call that this was gonna the iPhone 8 was gonna sell, you know, a good percentage more than the iPhone 7. And they will definitely be in the late, you know, they must be in the late prototype stage and, you know, almost maybe into early production by this time, right? If they're going to unveil it?
I was having the same soon? The same kind of thoughts. I thought, well, shoot, if they're releasing this in the late summer, they've got to be ramping up production by now because, as you said, they are going to have to make a bazillion of these things, and they can only make so many at a time. They've got to be getting them ready. If they're not getting them ready now, they have to start doing that soon so that they have like a stock warehouse or warehouses full of these things ready to sell because if they come out and they release, as we've talked about in the show, a 4.7-inch form factor with a – it's supposed to have a 5.8-inch screen, and it's going to be a no-bezel design, this thing is going to sell like crazy. I mean, they're going to sell – there's going to be people stabbing each other in the Apple lines to get their hands on these things. It's going to be like the iPhone 6, which was absolutely bonkers.
As far as I understand it, they have prototypes when they have prototypes even when fairly final prototypes even when the previous generation is released. So they already, you know, like in other
You're
words,
kidding. They have them that far ahead of time?
Yeah, because you know it takes them a good long time to test everything out, to make all these changes, to get all the production lines set up. They're making these things in the hundreds of millions, you know, like the amount of effort, the amount of machinery, the amount of, production capacity is ginormous. So, I mean, they're working on that simultaneously. Like they're already, you know, they would already be thinking about that, thinking about how to make these things, even as they're developing the prototypes, even before that, you know, the previous generation has been released. So in other words, when the iPhone 7 came out, more than likely, they probably had a bunch of iPhone 8 prototypes. And of course, and then the problem then is as soon as the iPhone 7 comes out, they're going to be looking at producing, you know, how to manufacture the next generation. So they already have the prototypes. The problem then is how to make it. So that's what they're spending the next year on, is working out those problems.
The actual specifics of manufacturing.
Right. And meanwhile, they're working on the prototype for the iPhone 9, you know, behind the scenes.
I wonder if that's tough for Johnny Ive. He comes out and he has to do these promotional videos, and he's promoting a video that's not even their best product because he knows he already has the new phone in his hands, right?
Right.
And he's sitting there in his V-neck and he's looking at this phone that he probably created like 3 years ago that's finally being produced, and he knows this is not the coolest, newest tech that they have.
Right. I think the iPhone 7, you know, was actually a hangover, right? Because they were going to introduce a lot of the stuff in the iPhone 8 last year, but they couldn't get the manufacturing right, which is why they're introducing it this year. Right? Remember the rumors about
all the things. How complicated this all must be.
It really is.
The operations. I mean, you're moving. You're ordering millions and billions of small parts, and they all have to be assembled and shipped and moved. And you have all these contingencies that may happen. You may not be able to secure parts, or your manufacturing might not come together. And then you have to switch to a different prototype that you were probably or maybe not going to use. I mean, this is just it's just unreal how complex it all is.
Right, exactly. It is.
And in the background, you have the Illuminati controlling it all.
Well, in the background, you've got people like Samsung, you know, who are desperately peddling to keep up, you know, with this as well. And they have enormous resources, but then, you know, they cut corners and they put batteries out that explode. And, you know, you can see how that happens, right? It's brutal. It really is brutal. It's not easy at all.
And the crazy thing is, Samsung phones aren't cheap either. They're premier phones.
Right.
So, you know, are they really cutting corners, or they just miss the fact that their batteries couldn't operate without exploding? I mean, because that stuff seems to not really ever happen to Apple. Like, you never really hear about an Apple computer having the batteries, you know, expand as you do in some other devices and, you know, have a danger of, like, catching fire or exploding. Like, that just never happens to Apple. It makes you wonder why. Like, what are they doing differently that's Samsung isn't doing?
It does, right, Buster? We've done a few stories on it.
Yeah.
About exploding like MacBook Pros?
Yeah, been exploding phones.
Yeah, it happens.
So it does happen from time to time. I can't remember the last time I've heard of someone complaining about that.
Oh, like there was like a MacBook Pro story like a week or two ago, and another iPhone story that Apple was looking into.
Where the batteries actually got swollen and exploded?
Like, I don't know if the batteries got swollen and exploded, but the device caught on fire from the battery. So I imagine.
Did you hear about that trial in Texas this morning?
No.
It was an arson trial, and the defendant's lawyer, his phone caught fire in his pocket.
Oh, really?
It was crazy. at an arson trial, right? It's perfect.
That's really funny. Did you guys hear, before we move on here, the guy who invented the lithium ion battery, he came out with his idea of the next version of the battery. Did you guys hear anything about this?
No.
So I think this guy's a professor at a college. He helped develop lithium ion, and they were talking about the problems with lithium ion, and they go into like these technical descriptions about why they catch fire and what happens, you know, at a chemical level that causes those phones to be prone to exploding. And he created a new version of this battery that he is starting to test out, and they replaced some of the chemicals. And he said this battery is far, far more stable and can hold like three times the battery capacity of what lithium ion batteries can currently hold. They're cheaper to produce, they're more stable, and they can be recharged like 3 to 5 times more than a normal lithium ion battery can be charged. So if this guy actually, you know, develops this technology and makes it widely available, you could see electric car batteries triple in distance. I mean, from going, you know, like 260 miles to, you know, maybe 600, even 700, 800 miles on a single charge, and the batteries would be more stable and cheaper to produce. Total tangent, but I'm really interested in battery technology. We've had the same battery technology in a long time.
This is the thing I think that's holding back. You know, like if you look at the technologies in the iPhone, you know, the chip is followed Moore's law. The cameras have followed Moore's law, or even greater. You know, the amount of improvement has been insane. But the batteries really is the one thing that really hasn't improved, and that same level.
And the battery is always the biggest part in all of these devices. I mean, imagine if he creates a new battery that has three times the capacity, Apple could shrink the batteries way down and still give you the same battery life, and maybe even make your device smaller or lighter. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities out there. And yeah, they haven't changed lithium-ion battery technology in any significant way in a really long time. Battery technology has just kind of remained stagnant for some reason.
And in cars, it would make a huge difference because it would really lighten up the weight of the car.
Gasoline engines would be done. They would be done. I mean, if you could go, if you've never driven an electric car, once you drive one, you'll be sold. Unless you're like a real like motorhead and you like, you know, turning your own wrenches and you love the sound of the engine roaring. And I do. I used to have a muscle car when I was when I was a younger man, and they're great. But the electric cars, they have so much torque. They're so much fun to drive. They are the future. I think the writing's on the wall, but then again, like the battery capacity is a major issue. And if they could come out with a battery that could give you like 1,000 miles of range, dude, game over, man. Game over, man. Oh man, that made me sad. R.I.P.
This guy's 94 years old. I
know. He's still going. He's a baller. He probably hangs out with P. Diddy on the weekend.
He's got some batteries of his own, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think his own body is running on some of his own batteries.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's going strong, man. He's still designing new batteries at 94. That's insane.
Look at his name, though. John Goodenough. That can't be right.
That's his real name, isn't
good
it?
Good enough.
I know. It's crazy, right? That's probably his life motto, too. Is this good enough? Not yet, it's not.
He's an emeritus professor at the Cockrell School of Engineering at the University of Texas.
There you go, the Cockrell School, world-renowned.
Funny.
Okay, well, all that said, let's go ahead and move into the last segment of the show, What We're Into.
Shit, what am I going to pick?
I think I should do it like that from now on. This is a segment where we talk to you guys about the stuff that we're currently enjoying that may not be Apple-related. Okay. I've got a pretty sweet pick.
What is it?
You want me just to start?
Yeah, you might as well.
Okay. Do you have any guesses, Buster?
Let me think. I did when I started the show, but I forgot it.
The Nintendo Switch.
Oh, yes. I knew that's what it was going to be. Yeah.
I figured that's what you were thinking because I talked about it last week. So I got a Nintendo Switch, Nintendo's new console. It's a mobile console. It's a gaming console that you can play on your TV. It's both, and I only bought one single solitary game.
Zelda?
For my Nintendo Switch. I bought Zelda.
Of course.
Breath of the Wild. And I cannot get enough of this game. I feel like I'm 10. Like, when I was in junior high school, I told my parents I was sick one day so I could stay at home and play video games. That's how I feel about this game. It's magical. It's whimsical. It just makes you feel like a kid when you're playing it. It goes to show that Nintendo's game developers, their first-party game developers, have this uncanny ability to build in magic into their devices and into their games. Now, I could talk about the Nintendo Switch, but I don't want to talk for another 10 or 15 minutes about both products. I just want to keep it about the software. People are saying it's game of the year. It's certainly one of the best games I've played. I've only put about 10 hours into it. And I think I probably have about another 80 or 90 more hours because I'm one of those guys that does absolutely everything. And the thing about it I really love is it plops you into this huge, diverse world that is full of wonder and exploration. And it doesn't tell you what to do. You're just there. And you get to figure out what you want to do. You can climb virtually everything in the game. You can destroy things in the game. The landscapes, in many ways, are destructible. There's all these fun creatures to interact with and discover. So I've just been wandering around having a ball, having a blast, and I can't get enough of it. In fact, once we're done here, I might be going back to my Nintendo Switch to play. It's like when I got into World of Warcraft. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that game. I played it for 3 months, and I ended up having to quit because I was addicted to World of Warcraft. For like 3 months, it's all I did. I played it every chance I got. I would play it all day on Saturday and Sunday. You know, it's like my weekend was just World of Warcraft, me sitting in a chair, and finally I had to quit. And that's kind of how I'm feeling right now. So the good thing is this game actually has an ending. You can't just play it indefinitely. Lander, what were you going to say?
It sounds sad and lonely, but I won't make such rude comments about your habits.
Don't talk about my friends that way.
Yeah.
Don't talk about my friends of Hyrule in that manner. It's great. And if you haven't gotten a Nintendo Switch, if you can afford it, for the $300, I think it's worth it. It's a really great console. Nintendo has, it's not perfect. There's certainly some things I could criticize about it. I've had some issues with it, as people who follow me on Twitter have discovered. I've complained about some of those. But by and large, it's been a good purchase for me. Buster, you want to go next?
Sure. I guess I will talk about this new bike I got. It's called the Priority Continuum bike, and it's pretty sexy. It's kind of,
sounds like a John Mayer album.
Yeah,
Continuum. In fact, he did have an album Priority Continuum. That's right. What's different about it than a normal bike?
Okay, do you remember the last Priority bike I had? It had, like, instead of a chain, it has a belt, and then it had a different like brake system, and it's just like they're supposed to be like super easy to use, super easy to fix, like hassle-free bikes. So like this one, it actually has like multiple gears and everything, so it's really nice. Like the what does it say? I was trying to look at what the heck they call it.
Like how many gears it actually has?
It doesn't actually lift, like show it. Like it's kind of like super simplified, kind of like if Apple built a bike, instead of like worrying about like the gear number, you just twist this dial and like it flattens this like fake hill. So like if you're going uphill, you want the hill to be bigger, and if you're on flat ground, you want to like turn it till like it's totally flat. It's kind of ridiculous, but also like super simple and easy to like understand. So it's really nice. And then it's got like disc brakes and a carbon drive belt. So it's like just super smooth when you're switching gears, and it goes like way faster than the three-speed other Priority bike that I had. It's like twice as expensive though, but it looks super cool.
How much is it?
It's like $900.
Oh, dude, that's not bad for a bike. Are you kidding
me? No, it's pretty solid. $900, especially for like a pretty decent like city road bike. Like, yeah.
Yeah, solid bike. I bought a bike like 3 or 4 years ago, and it was $900, and it's just like a normal bike.
Yeah, like they say, like similar bikes sell for like $1,600. So
it's like a high tech bike, a high tech city cruiser bike that's also affordable.
Right. Yeah.
Nice, dude. Okay, that's called the Priority Continuum.
Yeah.
And if you see a super sweaty guy biking around Phoenix, Arizona,
yeah,
in really short jean shorts, you've just spotted Buster Heine. Go say hi. All right, Leander, what do you got?
Tell me if I talked about this before, but it's the Netgear Orbi wireless router.
Orbi.
I'm not sure if you did talk about it. I think you mentioned that you got it, but I'm not sure you actually talked about it.
Okay, yeah. So it's one of these mesh routers, you know, very similar to the Luma and to the Eero. The Eero one, you know, that was the first one I got my hands on, and I really was raving about that because you, instead of, you know, one router, you get three routers, and you put them in different parts of your house, and it solved all of our coverage problems. You know, we used to have dead spots in certain parts of the house, and especially at the back of the house, you know, and it was kind of, you know, and it was, we were running a time capsule, an Apple time capsule, which was great for backups, but it wasn't that great. You know, I had to keep on resetting it, and I could never cure the dead spot. So anyway, Eero was the first one I tested. Then I tried Luma, which was great too. But this Orbi one from Netgear is by far the best. And it's actually a tri-band Wi-Fi system. So the other ones I think use... this one has a dedicated channel.
Just for the Orbi to talk to each other.
Yeah, just for the ones to talk to each other. So the handoff is really, really smooth. It's super, super fast. This one has been really, really stable. We get blazing speeds from our cable provider anyway at home. So it's really, really fast, and it's really, really stable. We haven't had to do any rebooting, haven't had any glitches, any problems at all. It's funny because it totally disappears, and you forget, you know, that Wi-Fi used to be a headache in our house, which is really, really nice. So this one is really good. The things are gigantic, though. They're pretty big boxes.
They're huge, man.
They are. And,
yeah. Which I personally don't mind, but they are big for
a router.
They are
big. They're big, yeah. They're big. Well, I've got one upstairs in one of the kids' bedrooms and one downstairs next to the router.
You got it in the kids' bedroom. It always makes me a little nervous because they're so powerful. It's like, is this kid going to be glowing, you know, in 2-3 weeks?
I think it's going to be okay. In fact, I know it's okay. I know it's fine. You know,
I'm sure it'll probably be okay.
I got him some tinfoil pajamas. And
if you don't mind
here.
Sleeping in chainmail, you're going to be just fine.
He's going to be okay. I had to put it there. There's nowhere else to put it, unfortunately, to make sure that we get the coverage at the front of the house. There was no other place to put it.
Uh huh.
And anyway, he's happy. He's got blazing fast Wi-Fi up in his room.
He's like, I don't care if my gonads are shrinking. I have blazing fast Wi-Fi. That's all that matters.
Exactly, but he's playing his games with his friends over the internet. Yeah.
Thanks, Dad. It's amazing how much difference a new router can make. I've been messing around with a Netgear R6700 router, and I put my time capsule aside, which is what I was using as well. Lander, and man, it has made a night and day difference in speed throughout my house. I'm getting like 3, 4, 5 times increase in speed on in areas of my house that would get like, you know, 1 or 2 bars. Now I have like full speed, right, or even faster in my house, and it's just a single unit. So I'm kind of wondering if it might be time to replace my time capsule and just, you know, wish it well forever.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can turn off the Wi-Fi on the time capsule and still use it as a backup drive.
I was thinking about that potentially as well.
As a time machine target. Yeah. So it's still useful. And that's exactly what we did. But yeah, it's definitely time to upgrade to one of these new mesh systems. They really are good. And in fact, you know, the Eero is really good. I thought was really good. Then that one's slightly more expensive, although I think they just dropped the price. I think that's about $400. The Luma is really good. That's like $300 for 3 devices. And then the Netgear is about $350 street price for 2 devices. And, you know, to be honest, I think the Netgear is the way to go.
I think you might be right. I think it might be king of the mesh routers right now. Although Google's actually has been getting a really solid.
I actually heard mixed things about the Google one.
Yeah, I've only heard good things. What did you hear?
That it had to be rebooted. And in fact, they screwed it up last week, didn't they? They turned everyone's routers off with some glitch.
Whoopsies.
Yeah, like a whole bunch of them went offline. I shouldn't hold that against them, but I'd heard actually that I'd seen people complaining about the Wi-Fi, the Google mesh system.
I hadn't heard that. That's the first criticism I've heard from anyone about it. And on Amazon, it has great reviews too. So I wonder if that was just like a recent thing, like maybe just like a firmware glitch or something that they screwed up in a firmware update that they're going to fix.
I don't know. Yeah. Netgear's been around for a long time. One of the things I like, you know, is that this one's a little more configurable, and there's a bunch of stuff you can dive into in the settings. You know, some of the Eero and the Lumas, I think, were definitely set up to make it really easy to run these things, and a lot of the configuration was actually taken care of by, you know, the parent company over the internet. So software updates were automatic. They claimed to be monitoring, the company was monitoring the bandwidth and any interference issues, and would fix it dynamically, you know, from their servers.
Oh, interesting.
But, you know, and so I found that, you know, like having messed around with routers forever, and you know, I was constantly in the airport app, you know, trying to futz with things.
Yeah, right.
I kind of like to be able to get in there, especially just to restart the thing. Like if it's acting up, like a rope. One of the things I like to do with it, with the Apple Timecast, was do a rope remote restart.
With your iPhone?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would do that too.
Yeah, so, and you can do that with the Orbi ones, which you couldn't do with the other ones.
Do you know if the Orbi are compatible with Bridge Mode?
I don't.
Okay. So that's one of the things about those mesh routers that I've discovered. So big shout out to Big Torg, who let me, one of our listeners, who gave me a set of Luma routers, and I was trying them out for a while. And one of the things I eventually figured out is they're just so limited. You can't really, and you were just saying this, Leander, you can't really adjust anything. Everything is just kind of plug and play. And I think the Luma especially are for people who don't really want to mess around with anything. They just want to have Wi-Fi in their home. But they were a little too rudimentary for me. And actually, I found they weren't as fast as, certainly not the Netgear that I'm using now, the R6700. But even in some areas, not as fast as my Apple Time Capsule. I had the newest version of the Time Capsule, and it was faster in a few of the rooms in my house than the Luma, which is weird, right? Because it's a mesh system. You would think that you would have faster speeds in all the rooms because you have a wider area of Wi-Fi signal, but that didn't necessarily it wasn't true in my case. And then also you didn't have Bridge Mode, which is something that I really like to use sometimes. So anyway, all right, well, anything else about the router, Leander? You want to write it a sonnet or a poem or something before we go?
No, not right now. I have to write up a good review. I was going to do a head-to-head, you know, like comparing all three.
Yeah. Oh,
I want to test the speeds too, because the speed thing it really is, I'm a little skeptical because it's difficult to test, isn't it? You actually have to do some very, very careful tests where you're just testing the speed of the Wi-Fi itself. So you got to do things like writing big files to remote drives,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. It looked a bit tricky. It was sort of, I didn't have the time to delve into how to figure out a proper test methodology.
That is true, because you don't want to rely on your internet connection.
No, it's gonna be the internal. You're gonna be measuring the sort of, you know, the quality of the internal Wi-Fi signal, and it's gonna be like machine to machine,
exactly
inside the network. You can't be relying on the internet connection. Although, you know, it's worth testing that too. To make sure that, you know, there's like this sort of, you know, it's there's not something that's screwing up your internet connection either.
Well, I mean, that's easy to do, though. You just use the speed test app on your phone.
Right, yeah.
That's super easy to test. It's exciting, isn't it? It's really cool to see. I mean, I haven't really messed around with routers since 2013 when I got my Time Capsule. And now it's like, whoa, there's actually been some serious progression in routers, and there's some great stuff out there.
Yeah.
So I'm really a lot more interested in router technology now, because I kind of geek out on routers. I don't know why. I just like the more antennas, the better. I want it to look like a transformer, right? Like I just want it to look cool. I want it to have like lights on it and stuff. Like I love that stuff.
Is that what the Netgear one looks like? It's got about 12 antennas.
It's got three. Yeah, it's got three. And it looks like Optimus Prime's helmet or something. It's just like totally crazy and sleek. And but I love that stuff, man. I mean, I just love big giant routers that just pump out the signal. I'm gonna put some monster truck tires on mine. Anyway, okay, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come tell us what your favorite router is and tell us how sexy it is, we're on Twitter. We're just waiting to hear from you. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Leander is L. Caney. Buster is B-S-T-3-R. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. Well, thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. You got a good Barney for us, Leander? Can you do a Barney?
Oh, I don't have
Hi,
Barney.
Guys. That's me.
Right. You got a loud burp for us to send us out? You know, for being a fake burp, that was pretty solid. You got any cool stories for us, Leander? Anything cool happening in San Francisco?
Cool, no.
Yeah. How's your gym going? You still getting fed salmon to lift weights?
Oh, no. I haven't been back. I had to cancel it because it was getting too expensive.
Oh.
But I went to the doctor this morning for some mole. And he's like, okay, take off a little closer.
Jeez, that escalated quickly.
Oh, my God. So I had to take them all off and I'm standing there. And he says, okay, wait a second. Let me just go get the dermatologist. Oh, my God. So he comes back in with, this middle-aged woman. And I'm standing there stark because it was awful. And she's, but they're very professional. But, they're prodding. And
they only laughed three or four times.
Well, there was more like horrified looks between them. And then, she had this little magnifying glass, that. So she's, I know, yeah. Is it really that small, sir?
I feel like if your doctor is going to make you strip down to nothing and then come back in with a woman, he should probably give you some warning.
He did. I exaggerated a little bit.
Oh, he did. Okay.
That was kind of what it was. That was the short version.